Exodus chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. And a man of the house of Levi went and took as wife a daughter of Levi. So the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a beautiful child, she hid him 3 months. But when she could no longer hide him, she took an ark of bulrushes for him, daubed it with asphalt and pitch, put the child in it, and laid it in the reeds by the river's bank. And his sister stood afar off to know what would be done to him. Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river, and her maidens walked along the riverside. And when she saw the ark among the reeds, she sent her maid to get it. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby wept. So she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the Hebrews' children." Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Go." So the maiden went and called the child's mother. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him, and the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. So she called his name Moses, saying, "Because I drew him out of the water." This morning, I wish to honor and encourage the mothers of the church by explaining and applying some of the principles found in this passage. Moses' mother was about as good and godly a mother as you'd ever expect to find, so I set her before you, as well as her noble example, according to 8 main points. First being, good mothers go unnoticed. They oftentimes go unnoticed. Moses' mother did have a name, but it's not even mentioned here. She is simply identified as the wife of a Levite, as the mother of a son. And is this not typical? Husbands and sons go down in history and get all the glory, but their mothers oftentimes go unnoticed, unremembered, receiving little or no recognition. The great mother of Moses. Her name is only mentioned in 2 verses of the Bible, but the name of her son, however, in 788 verses of the Bible. It may be a minor point, but I think it's worthy of meditation, especially, yes, on Mother's Day, and especially in a church that has leanings toward patriarchy. Listen, gentlemen, in all of our efforts to be the men and leaders and heads and even patriarchs that God has called us to be, let's never forget what is written. "Nevertheless, neither is man independent of woman, nor woman independent of man in the Lord. For as woman came from man, even so man also comes through woman. But all things are from God." That passage, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, reminds us that while women were made for men, there's not a man in this world who does not owe his existence in this world to a woman, namely his mother. Further, it's also a well-known historical fact that men usually owe to a great degree who they are, what they become, to their mothers, to their influence and instruction. Great philosophers have admitted this later in life. Great and conquering kings have admitted this later in life. Even a couple of our notable presidents have admitted this later in life. But why, I ask, wait until later in life? Good mothers go unnoticed far too often, and I would encourage you all, therefore, to take note of your mother's work, her labor and faith, and honor her, even as God has commanded you, not only today, but every day. For while her name may not go down in history, while her name may not be remembered by any, it should always be remembered in your heart. I've said enough on that point. Let me move to my next. Second, good mothers come from good homes. Good homes. We're not given a lot of information about her upbringing, but we're given enough to establish the fact, I think, that she came from a good and godly home. This mother was born in a godless country, during godless and cursed years, yet she was nevertheless born to God-fearing parents. How do we know? First of all, her name. Her parents named her Jochebed, or Yah Kavod, which means Jehovah's glory, the glory of Jehovah. Even Jehovah is her glory. This mother had a good and a godly name. We also know that her father was Levi, son of the patriarch Jacob. He also would soon become the head of the ministerial household in Israel. Conclusion, this mother also had a good and godly heritage, lineage. Also, we're given a hint as to the character of her household as she grew up. Her brother, Kohath, so honored by God that he and his family were put in charge of assembling and transporting the Holy of Holies, even the Ark of the Covenant. Not a lot of information, but it's enough to suggest, if not establish, the fact that this mother came from a good and godly house. So, quick application to the parents. The present state of your home does have far-reaching consequences from generation to generation. How you live today on a daily basis will undoubtedly affect your children and their children's children. There is not a day that passes in our lives where we do not teach something positively to our children about what it means to serve the living God as a faithful parent, and they learn day by day, learning more from casually watching us than when we are formally catechizing them. We need to remember that, especially mothers, for I'm sure that every mother here would love to see your daughters grow up to be even half the woman and half the mother that Jochebed was. But perhaps I need to back up a step, because Jochebed was not a mother, obviously, until after she got married. And that leads to another worthy point, which is this. Good mothers marry well. Here we are told that Jochebed married a Levite. And the statement is more than just a passing historical or genealogical fact. To say that Jochebed married a Levite is to say she married in the Lord, that she was married within the household of faith, that she was equally yoked in marriage, and this is very necessary if you wish to be a good mother. Sadly, there are so many Christian women who make that dreadful mistake of marrying a man who is either weak in the faith or not even in the faith at all, and their lives, maybe not immediately, but their lives are eventually made miserable because of it. Ah, but they're so optimistic when love struck. Oh, he'll grow in the faith eventually. I, as his helpmeet, will encourage him to grow in the faith after we get married. Foolish girl. Men are not easily changed, and what a man is today is oftentimes a very good indicator of what he'll be in 10, 20, even 50 years. And that's why the Bible is so explicit, even forcibly so on this matter. Both Old and New Testaments alike forbid interfaith marriage. Deuteronomy 7, speaking of the Canaanites. Nor shall you make marriages with them. You shall not give your daughter to their son, nor take their daughter for your son, for they will turn your sons away from following me to serve other gods. So then the anger of the Lord will be aroused against you and destroy you suddenly. 2 Corinthians 6, probably more familiar. Do not be unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness? What communion has light with darkness? What accord has Christ with the devil? What part has a believer with an unbeliever? Answer, obvious, none. No part at all. And that's why our confession of faith in this church says this. It is the duty. It is the duty of Christians to marry only in the Lord. And therefore, such as profess the true Reformed religion should not marry with infidels, papists, or other idolaters. Neither should such that are godly be unequally yoked by marrying with such that are notoriously wicked in their life or maintaining damnable heresies. Good mothers, godly mothers, marry well. And marrying well means marrying within the Christian Reformed faith. Do this, ladies, and you will be blessed. You will be blessed with joy, stability, safety, and also with fruitfulness, which is my next point. Number 4, good mothers are fruitful. They are blessed by God with fruitfulness, even as it's written, He grants the barren woman a home, like a joyful mother of children. Jochebed was given a home, a good home, a godly home, even in this pernicious society, idolatrous, evil Egypt. Jochebed was also given children, good and godly children, all of whom became somewhat famous in the annals of church history. Her first child is Miriam. At this time, 7 years old, she's even described here as being helpful in the home, faithfully assisting her mother. And she eventually grew up to be a great prophetess and leader of the women in praise and in worship. Jochebed's second child was Aaron. He's about 3 years old at this time. And he, as you know, grew up to be Moses' spokesman, up to and during the Exodus from Egypt. And he also became the first high priest of Israel. But her fruitfulness didn't end there. Even though times were tough, even though it just became illegal to have any male children, she yet had another child, Moses. Three children, all of whom grew up to be prominent, glorious members of the church. And what mother doesn't desire such fruitfulness of her own womb? But I'll add yet another point on her fruitfulness. An ancient rabbi rightfully said this: there was a Jewish woman who was the mother of 600,000 children. That's how many men, not even including women and children, who walked out of Egypt. And all of them, these 600,000 men, all of them to some degree, had Jochebed to thank as the mother of this new nation. She was fruitful. She was also faithful, filled with faith. She walked by faith, not by sight, which is my next point. Number 5, good mothers have faith. And this faith, like Jochebed's faith, is present at every stage of their maternal lives. Think of it. At the time of conception, and by faith, Jochebed was emboldened to obey God rather than man. Even though the government said not to, she kept having children. At the time of birth, and by faith, Jochebed was able to see in Moses that which is not visible to the eyes, the favor of God, that this little one was well-pleasing to her covenant God. At the time of persecution, and yes, by faith, Jochebed was able to cast off fear, not fearing the king's command, hiding her child for 3 months, knowing full well that she could be arrested, punished, and that he would be immediately executed if found. At the time of necessity, and by faith, Jochebed was able to give her son over to God, even prematurely, entrusting her beloved son into God's hands as she placed him in the river. Then at the time of mercy, and yes, by faith, Jochebed was able to enjoy her son, to nurse her son, breastfeeding him until he was weaned. But then again, a time of necessity. And yes, by faith, Jochebed was able to give him over once again, entrusting him once again into God's hands as she sent Moses into Pharaoh's palace to live. All of these circumstances are admittedly unique, but I do not think that her faith is. I think her faith is notable, it's worthy, it's also common, or should be common, in the life of every mother. And please note that Jochebed's faith, though strong and miraculous, was not one of those let go and let God kinds of faiths. It was far more practical, far more productive, far more prudent than that. It's a worthy point, number 6. Good mothers work hard. This passage gives us a small hint as to how industrious and hardworking this woman was. I mean, besides being a slave in Egypt, besides being a helper to her husband, besides caring for 3 children, she also made this plan, she made this ark, and then she made sure all of it worked out according to plan. We have no idea how long these preparations and these plans took, but every mother knows there is scarcely enough hours in the day even to perform the most necessary domestic duties besides these side projects. Nevertheless, she did it. Jochebed planned. How else would she know exactly what day of the week and what time of the day and what part of the river this princess went to bathe? She prepared, not only making a basket, but making a basket that's watertight so that her child would be safe and secure. Jochebed was prudent, not only getting all these things in order, making her plans, but also executing it, sending her daughter to make sure that everything was going according to plan. Now, some might see all this as antithetical to a true and lively faith, all this planning and preparation. Her faith is beyond dispute, the quality of it. And these works, I think, are necessary and healthy outworkings of a true and a lively faith. Hearts that are filled with faith need to be complemented with hands that are filled with good, practical works. Even as it's written of the virtuous wife, she watches over the ways of her household. She doesn't eat the bread of idleness. Therefore, her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, he praises her, saying, "Many daughters have done well, but you excel them all. You excel them all." Children and husband praising her in the gates. Leads to my next point, number 7. Good mothers do need help. Even in thinking of this proverbial virtuous wife, do not think that the only thing she ever received from her children and her husband was praise. I'm sure she also received help from them, which every mother needs. Jochebed needed that as well. I do think she received it. We already know from this passage that Miriam helped her execute this elaborate plan of make the basket, put it in the river while the princess is taking the bath. Is that the only thing Miriam ever did to help her mother? I doubt it. I suspect that Miriam was a great help to her mother on a daily basis, especially when you think of the reality of biblical life. Jochebed had a toddler running around the house at this stage. She had a nursing infant constantly at her breast. Miriam was a great blessing, undoubtedly, to her mother. And that's the way it should be. Older children should, they must, help their mothers with the daily chores and such. It's not only a good way to express your gratitude, but it's also a good way to prepare for adulthood. Miriam, no, she's not old enough to be married, but she would be soon enough. And all this domestic experience would be a great benefit to her and to her husband and to her children in that day. And let's not forget about Jochebed's husband in all this. He, too, was a great help to his wife. Certainly not during the day, ladies. He literally was out from dawn until dusk, slaving away at his labor. But he was there for his wife when he needed to be there. It's proven in Hebrews 11:23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents because they saw he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's command. This verse proves that, though it may seem such at first reading, Jochebed did not do all of this alone. She did it with the approval and with the assistance of her husband. Together, they did these things by faith. Main point, good mothers, yes, even the best mothers under heaven need help, and we ought to be quick to offer it. Really, they deserve it, and it's part of their reasonable reward for their diligence. But the reward doesn't end there. It continues. I'll close with one more point on that. Number 8, good mothers are rewarded. Jochebed's life was undoubtedly hard, being a slave mother in Egypt. But as hard as her life was, it probably seemed less hard as she watched God's faithfulness to reward her day by day and throughout the years. God rewarded Jochebed with peace. Peace that passed all human understanding when she had this illegal baby boy, yet was not afraid of the king's command. God rewarded Jochebed with even more peace of mind when he, in his providence, caused the princess of Egypt not only to find him, but to love him and have compassion on him. God rewarded Jochebed with emotional joy when, again, in his providence, he worked all these things together for good so that she could breastfeed her own son. Several months, maybe even years, before she had to give him up again. God even rewarded Jochebed monetarily, again in his providence, working all things together for good, blessing the fruit of her hands, causing this wet nurse arrangement to be a paid position. God rewarded Jochebed with patience as she waited upon God, as she had to watch her son growing up as a pagan in a pagan land. God rewarded Jochebed with encouragement After 40 years, she got to watch her son become a man as he stood up for the first time for one of his persecuted brothers. But then she was rewarded once again with peace of mind and with patience as her son disappeared again for another 40 years to become the man of God he was called to be. And finally, if she lived that long, God rewarded her with honor and praise in the gates as she, but also the whole congregation of Israel, watched her daughter, Miriam, become a prophetess and lead the women in praise after the Red Sea crossing. As her, and as well as the entire congregation, watched Aaron, her son, anointed, ordained, and installed to the high priestly office. Her, as well as all the people watching Moses, her youngest, become the great deliverer, the leader, and the lawgiver of God's people. Such, I think, are the sweet and rich rewards that God offers to all those who love him, who fear him, and keep his commandments. Amen.